from the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up last night, as President Trump was preparing to announce his nominee to replace retiring Justice Anthony Kennedy, I was over at the Supreme Court where the protests of opposition were well underway even before Judge Brett Kavanaugh had been announced as the nominee. It was clear the left would oppose anyone President Trump selected. We'll talk with Congressman Andy Biggs of Arizona in just a moment. And later, Oklahoma Senator James Lankford will weigh in on the president's nominee, and he'll give us the latest on the efforts to free Pastor Andrew Brunson, who is being wrongfully detained in a Turkish prison. Pastor Brunson is headed back to court next week. Also, constitutional attorney and best-selling author Ken Klukowski will help us take a deeper look at Judge Kavanaugh's judicial record. And Citizens United to support the natural family, the protection of life, and the promotion and protection of religious liberty recently gathered in Rome. FRC's own Travis Weber, the Vice President of Policy here at the Family Research Council, was there. He'll be here to give us a report later here on Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, you can keep up with me, at T. Perkins. By the way, at the I think on our site, we've got the clip from Shannon Bream's show last night as I was talking about the judicial selection of the president. Again, you can find all that at the website, TonyPerkins.com. You know, as I mentioned, and you probably already know, the left is in full opposition mode to the president's selection of Brett Kavanaugh as the next Supreme Court justice. Now, to be clear, the opposition, I don't think so much is directed at Kavanaugh as it is the president and anyone he would pick. Joining us now to talk about it is Congressman Andy Biggs. He represents the 5th Congressional District of Arizona. He is a member of the House Judiciary Committee and a member of the House Freedom Caucus. Andy, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Tony. Good to be with you. Yeah.
Hey, before we jump into it, let me play this clip of what was taking place last night, some of the protest over at the Supreme Court building. Just unhinged. Here's just a taste of what took place.
We must ensure that we defeat Brett Kavanaugh. All our rights are at stake.
He is a dangerous man who will endanger our fundamental freedoms.
This just must not become the next justice on the Supreme Court. And what that will take is all of us fighting as hard and as long as we can.
We won't stand for any nominee, no Brett Kavanaugh, that wants to take away our constitutional rights.
Wow, they're a little worked up, aren't they, Andy?
Well, I mean, what you saw is the mob mentality. I mean, really, there's no reasoning with them. I mean, the last person yelled, "We won't stand for any nominee," and that's it. And you put your finger on it in your opening. They don't care about what the court's supposed to do. What they care about is it Donald Trump? Is it anybody who supports Donald Trump? And you know, this gets back to the town halls we got after President Trump was elected. I mean, we just opened it up and people would go absolutely crazy. Why? Because you supported Trump or you were Republican. And that's where the left has come, and you use the term unhinged, and I can't agree more. It is unhinged. They are unhinged. And the sad part about it for me is it bespeaks the fact that now the Supreme Court has become so politicized, which it's not supposed to be. It's supposed to be the weakest branch of government, but because they have been so political for so long that the left, since they can't get their policies through, and when they do, they fail, they've been using the court as their legislative branch, and now it looks like it might end, and so they're apoplectic.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And look, the court has made itself political, and the court, I would argue, the court is one of the primary reasons this nation is so divided politically is because they've stepped in on issues like abortion on demand and forced that on the entire nation. They've stepped in and they've redefined marriage for everyone, despite the fact that over a majority of the states had taken the other approach and and defined natural marriage as it has always been. So the court has politicized itself, and as you put your finger right on it, this president who pledged at the outset in his campaign to appoint constitutionalists, those who would abide by the letter of the Constitution, and even put out the names of 25 individuals that he would select from. And you're absolutely right. The reason they're unhinged is because they're losing the ability to force their agenda on America through the courts.
Well, that's right. They have been unsuccessful, quite frankly. That's why most of the legislatures in the country are Republican. That's why most governorships are Republican. That's why President Trump won, is because most electoral votes went to him. Outside of the coast and a few large cities in the interior, Americans are still a center-right country, and you cannot force the majority of Americans to adopt the Marxist socialist viewpoint that, plus the social justice and the liberal wing that they want so much. You can't get that through the voters, the ballot box. So what you can do is you can litigate, and that's what they've done consistently. And that's why one of the key points that we need to do is we need to retake the judiciary. And I'm not asking him to be activist conservative. I'm asking him just to go back to the original intent, which is what Brett Kavanaugh says he does. He goes to what is the statutory construction, what's the language there, and what is the Constitution and the language in the Constitution. And that's what it was always supposed to be, and the left just can't handle that. And it wouldn't have mattered. You know, if you would have if you found a Ruth Bader Ginsburg a clone, and Donald Trump said, "I'm going to appoint her," they would have been berserker anyway, you know?
I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Tuesday afternoon. Congressman Andy Biggs of Arizona, my guest, talking about the president's selection last night of Judge Brett Kavanaugh to be the next Supreme Court justice. Let me get your thoughts. I mean, we've talked about how he's a constitutionalist. When you look at the four apparent, you know, that were that were on the apparent short list, what are your thoughts about the pick?
I think it's an excellent pick, actually. You know, my first gut reaction was to go with Barrett Coney, because I think she's got a whole lot of intangibles. Besides, you know, just a stellar background as well. But this guy, Brett Kavanaugh, 300 published opinions in 12 years. 11 of them have been the basis for Supreme Court rulings, for Pete's sakes. I mean, and he's got a track record, and conservative support has been there for him. And this, here's the thing about not the people that were there last night, but there are liberals that have worked with him who say, look, you know, this guy is bright, he's qualified, and even though we disagree with him, he has a sound judicial philosophy, and that judicial philosophy is the original intent. And that's what President Trump promised. It's what people like me have been crying for decades, and we're going to get it.
Yeah, I'm with you. I actually thought the president might go with a with maybe Amy Barrett or a Hardiman, somebody that would be a little more of a fight, just because this president, you know, it's like if you're going to have a fight, let's have a good one. As you pointed out, anybody he picks is going to be a fight, so why not have a good fight? But anybody on the, that said, anybody on the list was good. I mean, we've had a chance to vet them, some better than others. I think Brett Kavanaugh, as you've described, is going to bring the court back in alignment with the Constitution, and that has the left just, you know, doing backflips. The reality is, and I to your point, I want to let our listeners know that you're not just saying that they would oppose anybody, but in fact, their press releases. For instance, the Women's March issued a press release last night slamming Trump's pick, whose name they forgot to add. Instead, the statement went out with XXX, where Kavanaugh's name should have been, proving that they would have repeated the same garbage no matter who was nominated. And then there was the group, the Democracy for America, sent out another embarrassing statement with a fill-in-the-blank opposition assuring the people that the DA would fight Kavanaugh because she represents a generational assault on justice, freedom, and core democracy. Maybe they were thinking that the president would tap Barrett as well. This is going to be a fight, but in the end, what's your sense? He gets confirmed?
I think he gets confirmed. I think this is not one that Collins and Murkowski can fight on, to be honest with you. I also think that there's some of the Democrats in the red states that they're going to have to cross over. They supported him when he went to the circuit court. So I think that he's going to get there. I think this is going to be a fight, but I think it's going to go quicker. Hopefully within the next 6-8 weeks we get this completed. And I just, Tony, just one thing to think about, too, is if there's a third pick for Donald Trump on the court, the rabble-rousers out there will absolutely not be able to contain themselves. And I fear for our country, but I do want that third pick. Yeah. But I am so pleased with the current pick. I think he gets confirmed. And I'm just looking down the road just a little bit further still.
Well, and I actually think this could pave the way for that third pick, because this is going to put some of those red state Democrats in a box, and I think this could spill over into the election. I do think they're going to want to dispatch this pretty quickly. They're going to want to get this behind them before the election, because the closer this is to the election, the more influence this has on the election, which,
yes,
in my view, and based on polling data, means that the GOP could actually pick up more seats in the Senate, making it easier to confirm the next justice.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right, Tony. And I think this is what I would call most fortuitous timing. And, I can't believe the opposition that's out there. It's not based on anything. I don't know if you saw the Campus Watch where they went to New York University and were interviewing students last week about Trump's pick. And these people, it just showed the position of the left that's out there. It's just they don't care who's out there. They're going to fight it. And that means that we choose our very best. We go in there armed, ready to go. And we just do what we need to do to get our candidates through and our nominees through. And I think Brett Kavanaugh is going to be, for a long, long time, a very solid, great justice.
Andy, we're up against the break, but you have a new podcast. Quickly tell our listeners how they can tap into that.
You can get it through the Apple Podcast, the iTunes podcast system. You can get it through SoundCloud, and you can go to my website and link into it. Love to have people listen in.
And just kind of give them a closer bird's eye view of what's happening on Capitol Hill, right?
Absolutely. Every Friday we put a new one out about what's going on. You bet.
All right. Andy Biggs, always great to have you on the program. Thanks for joining
us. Thanks, Tony. Keep it up.
All right. Coming up next, constitutional attorney Ken Klukowski is here to take a deeper dive into the judicial record of Brett Kavanaugh. That's next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away. More to come.
Are you ready to vote? Do you know the candidates and their platforms? There are important races happening for the Senate, the House, and many state and local primaries. Determining the right candidate to lead our nation can be difficult amidst the media spin and political rhetoric. Each elected official is given a platform to make a difference, and he or she will either be part of the problem or part of the solution when it comes to preserving and protecting your religious freedom, family values, and the dignity of human life. FRC Action is here to help prepare you to vote with our 2018 Voter Guide. Go to frcaction.org/voterguide to view the guide, election dates, and so much more. It's important to be informed when you enter the voting booth. This is your time to be a part of the solution for America. So, don't be silent. Be sure to vote. Again, that's frcaction.org/voterguide. Should state law require pregnancy resource centers to provide free advertising for the abortion industry? Congressman Andy Harris has spent his life serving his neighbors, country, and community, and has become one of the foremost advocates in Congress who has stood with these pregnancy resource centers as the Supreme Court determines whether the state can force individuals or private entities to act in contradiction to their beliefs. In 2017, the U.S. witnessed its lowest abortion rate since 1975, proving that these pro-life pregnancy centers have had a positive impact despite radical pro-abortion activists trying to violate First Amendment rights. Don't miss Representative Harris's discussion of the ongoing fight to protect the sanctity of life, as well as the First Amendment rights of those standing for the pro-life cause. Visit frc.org/lectures to view this important event.
Have you ever had doubts about your freedom to believe? All of us want to be free, especially when it comes to practicing our faith, which is so fundamental to who we are. In America, we tend to take religious freedom for granted, but millions of people around the world aren't so blessed. When basic freedoms are denied to us, the natural human reaction is one of anger. It is no surprise, then, that in countries where religious freedom is suppressed, violence soon follows. Today, we often see this violence spill into other countries in the form of terrorism. This is why religious freedom and national security go hand in hand. As religious freedom is cultivated worldwide, and as security and economic development occur along with it, the United States' national security interests are advanced. For more information on this important issue, visit frc.org/national security. That's frc.org/national security.
This is Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us. Website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. All right. The president has made his selection. About 2 weeks after Justice Anthony Kennedy announced he was retiring, the president has put forward what is his second nominee to the United States Supreme Court, the highest court. And as Congressman Biggs was talking about earlier, the court has become extremely politicized. And I hope that in this process of the hearings, the confirmation hearings, that this becomes kind of an educational opportunity, and we're certainly going to make it that way, to talk about the role of the court and how the role of the court has really become oversized. It's become kind of an uber legislative body, which it was never intended to do. And it's because the court has usurped the authority of the executive branch and of the legislative branch, taking on issues, setting policy that it was never intended to do. I mean, for instance, what's going on right now with you could take the immigration issue, where the courts have stepped in and told the president he can't determine what that policy is going to be. He stepped in on military policy and told the courts have stepped in. And told the president he cannot decide military policy, even though the previous president unilaterally put these policies in place. And so the court has exceeded its role. And that's why the left is so bent out of shape, is because this is going to be a change that's going to last a generation or longer. So where does Judge Brett Kavanaugh come down on these issues? What's his judicial record look like? Is he the constitutionalist that the president said he was going to put forward? Well, joining us now to talk about it, Ken Klukowski, national best-selling author and a Washington, D.C.-based lawyer, consultant, and journalist specializing in the Constitution and a former member of the FRC team. Ken, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me, Tony.
Well, Ken, you and I talked a little bit about this last night on our Facebook Live event right as the president announced Brett Kavanaugh. Let's talk a little bit about his judicial record. Is he the constitutionalist that the president has promised he would appoint to the court?
I believe that he is, Tony, and there are several areas of his jurisprudence where this is very clear. One of them, I think, if I was hearing your lead-in, your wind-up correctly, Brett Kavanaugh is a big supporter of the unitary executive, that he says Article 2 of the Constitution is clear, that the executive power is vested in a president of the United States. That means all the executive power. That means everyone in the executive branch who wields governmental power in the executive branch. They serve at the pleasure of the president. They should be removable by the president, and he would overturn the 1935 Supreme Court case, Humphrey's Executor, which became the foundational case for all of these alphabet soup agencies that are independent, just running their own shop. He would reinvest that power exclusively in the president, who in turn then answers to all of us as the people. So for that and a bunch of other decisions, I mean, this is someone, if you're looking for someone to drain the swamp in D.C., this kind of firm constitutional originalism is how you create the legal framework to do that.
And I think what the left is concerned about is when you put someone like that on the court, it really shrinks the influence of the court back to its constitutional boundaries. I mean, you know, I think the left is concerned that the autobiography that Donald Trump writes when his time in office is over is Honey, I Shrunk the Court, because that is how the left has ruled America for nearly a half a century.
Well, that's exactly right, and I think if you have, I'll tell you, if we get a working majority on the U.S. Supreme Court that says that just repeatedly says it's not our business, it's not our business, it's not our job. You know, call your local elected lawmaker. I mean, if we restore that kind of attitude on the U.S. Supreme Court, which we actually have not had. Consistently since the 1930s and haven't really had at all since the 1960s, if we were to rebuild that kind of a majority, as we may be doing here as we add Brett Kavanaugh to the Supreme Court, then the American people would be re-empowered because, once again, unelected and politically unaccountable judges would occupy a much more modest role in the daily life of our nation, where in a democratic republic like ours, the default rule is that the people rule, and they rule themselves through their elected legislators and executives, with unelected judges only dealing with legal cases and controversies that come up.
And that would be as the founders envisioned the court.
Yeah,
that would be the role that they envisioned the court. And it's become
exactly right.
And I think it's both been a voluntary and involuntary from a standpoint that the courts have grabbed more territory. But in some cases, the Congress has ceded that territory to them because they haven't wanted to deal with the hot button issues and they would prefer the court deal with it. Now, in some cases, the left is pushing for things that the Congress and the states won't do, so they take it to the courts and get them to do it. It's become kind of the default role of the courts to be the decider of difficult policy matters.
That's right. I mean, when we were adopting the Constitution, in the Federalist Number 51, James Madison, who drafted the entire Constitution, and of course then our fourth president, James Madison said that the way our system was set up, he said, ambition must counteract ambition. The idea is three vibrant branches that keep each other in check and leave the American people free to breathe because these titans of power would be busy struggling with each other and not with everyday men and women and their children.
Well, Ken, here's what I want to do over the next several weeks as the Senate is involved in these confirmation hearings is we want to talk more about the role of the court and help people understand why this is so significant. So
That's
much more to cover,
idea.
But we're out of time. Ken, we're going to have you back on again next week. We're going to talk more about this. Thanks for joining
us
today.
Thank you, Tony. God bless.
Hey, folks, don't go away. When we come back, our own Travis Weber recently was in Rome for the Citizen Go gathering of pro-life, pro-family, freedom-loving citizens from around the globe. That's next. Don't go away.
Are you ready to vote? Do you know the candidates and their platforms? There are important races happening for the Senate, the House, and many state and local primaries. Determining the right candidate to lead our nation can be difficult amidst the media spin and political rhetoric. Each elected official is given a platform to make a difference, and he or she will either be part of the problem or part of the solution when it comes to preserving and protecting your religious freedom, family values, and the dignity of human life. FRC Action is here to help prepare you to vote with our 2018 Voter Guide. Go to frcaction.org/voterguide to view the guide, election dates, and so much more. It's important to be informed when you enter the voting booth. This is your time to be a part of the solution for America. So, don't be silent. Be sure to vote. Again, that's frcaction.org/voterguide. Should state law require pregnancy resource centers to provide free advertising for the abortion industry? Congressman Andy Harris has spent his life serving his neighbors, country, and community, and has become one of the foremost advocates in Congress who has stood with these pregnancy resource centers as the Supreme Court determines whether the state can force individuals or private entities to act in contradiction to their beliefs. In 2017, the U.S. witnessed its lowest abortion rate since 1975, proving that these pro-life pregnancy centers have had a positive impact despite radical pro-abortion activists trying to violate First Amendment rights. Don't miss Representative Harris's discussion of the ongoing fight to protect the sanctity of life, as well as the First Amendment rights of those standing for the pro-life cause. Visit frc.org/lectures to view this important event.
I'm Tony Perkins, and this is Washington Watch. Glad to have you today. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at TPerkins. Still to come, Senator James Lankford of Oklahoma is going to join us to talk about the president's pick for the Supreme Court. Also going to give us an update on Pastor Brunson, who's due back in court in Turkey next week. But first, the premier global gathering of citizens united to support the natural family, the protection of life, and the promotion and protection of religious liberty met in Rome last week under the banner Citizen Go. The four-day event was aimed at building a new generation of citizens who might become active in promoting life, the natural family, and freedom all around the world. And representing the Family Research Council there was the Vice President of Policy, newly minted Vice President of Policy, Travis Weber. Travis, welcome back.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, you spoke at this event. Tell our listeners a little bit about it and why these international events like this are important.
Yeah, this was a really encouraging event. They invited me to address religious freedom conditions in the United States. So I gave them an overview of what we're facing here, a lot of the situations that we are really familiar with. They also had heard about the case of Jack Phillips, similar cases. They were familiar with the basic overview, but I was able to fill in the blanks for them and give them a sense of the broader trends we're facing. Now, the thing that's encouraging and disheartening at the same time is that these same trends are affecting many countries around the world. I mean, I met folks and built connections with folks from all over Europe and different countries, some Latin American countries, and a lot of them are facing attacks on the pro-life cause, attacks on the belief in marriage between a man and a woman. And basically, these historic Christian teachings lived out in the public square facing attacks. So it was an encouraging thing to see so many banding together and FRC being a part of this effort to band together with other folks addressing these issues worldwide. At the same time, it's discouraging to see them occurring, but we will continue to work with everyone who can agree with us on these issues.
I think what's encouraging to me, Travis, is that sometimes we kind of have this isolated view here in America that we're the only ones struggling against this. This same agenda is being pushed around the world, but you've got some really strong leaders standing up all around the world that are advocating for the same thing that we are, and some even more forcefully.
Yeah, and this, you know, this was really part of what was encouraging about the conference was meeting some of these folks. For instance, we heard from an Italian senator, Simone Pilon, who's addressing issues from the pro-life perspective there. I had the chance to interact with him after he spoke. We had a really good conversation. He's representing, he's also an attorney representing doctors who don't want to be forced into being complicit in providing abortions. He's also dealing with the situation where public crosses and public religious manifestations are being attacked in Italy. Same things we're facing here. Here's an Italian politician standing up for the defense of these issues. And I had the chance to meet him at this conference. That's only one example of the many relationships we were able to build there.
And as we are able to share success stories, it actually helps policymakers in other parts of the world, including ourselves, to know that there's victories being won on these when people stand up. A lot of times the reason we're losing these freedoms is that we don't stand up to defend the freedom.
Very true. The conferences like these are an encouragement and on a point of solidarity with others facing these issues, because you realize, okay, we're not the only ones dealing with this. Look at this person. We can draw encouragement from them. And on this score, we also heard from Aid to the Church in Need on the situation in the Middle East, Open Doors Asia representative on the situation in Asia, including some of the conditions in North Korea. So he was presenting to these folks from Europe, you know, in Latin America and the U.S., where we have challenges, but they're nothing like North Korean Christians face. So I think really hearing from some of these issues in more detail encourages people to stand here when we still are able to stand. We just need to stand up, fight for our rights and freedom, and articulate a defense of this in law and in the culture. So I think the conference was very helpful and a real point of encouragement in many ways.
It's also useful to be able to join together and advocate for those that are being persecuted for their faith. This morning, my first inaugural event as a commissioner with the United States Commission on International Religious Freedom, I spoke to the Vietnamese boat people, many that escaped the communist regime in that country via boat. And they're advocating for the religious freedom of those back in Vietnam. There's some developments in India that you and I were talking about as well on this front of religious freedom.
Yeah. I mean, we hear news almost every day about some situation that some Christians or those of other faiths are facing in terms of a threat to their religious freedom. Almost every day you're hearing about something somewhere in the world, and that's just what we know about. So imagine what's not being reported, what's not getting out. And of these situations, many in the church in the U.S. are still unaware. Partially it's just informational overload. Partially it's just inability to remain informed from a good avenue, a source of information. India, though, is a place where you see continual issues, threats from the culture aided by government inaction, to the ability of people to choose to live out their faith freely, Christian and otherwise. And this is something we need to continue to highlight.
And I think part of the challenge is that we get all this information to talk about information overload, but we've got to humanize it. We've got to personalize it. We've got to realize these are families. These are moms and dads, brothers and sisters, sons and daughters that are being persecuted simply for their faith.
Yeah, we have the freedom here to live out our faith, and we're continue to defend that. We need to advocate for that for people around the world.
And it starts with prayer. Every church in America can be praying for the persecuted. And we're going to talk more about that in the days ahead. Travis, out of time. Thanks so much for joining us. Glad that you are back safely.
Thanks, Tony.
All right, when we come back, Oklahoma Senator James Lankford weighs in on the president's pick for the Supreme Court. That's next. Don't go away.
Should state law require pregnancy resource centers to provide free advertising for the abortion industry? Congressman Andy Harris has spent his life serving his neighbors, country, and community, and has become one of the foremost advocates in Congress who has stood with these pregnancy resource centers as the Supreme Court determines whether the state can force individuals or private entities to act in contradiction to their beliefs. In 2017, the U.S. witnessed its lowest abortion rate since 1975, proving that these pro-life pregnancy centers have had a positive impact despite radical pro-abortion activists trying to violate First Amendment rights. Don't miss Representative Harris's discussion of the ongoing fight to protect the sanctity of life, as well as the First Amendment rights of those standing for the pro-life cause. Visit frc.org/lectures to view this important event.
Have you ever had doubts about your freedom to believe? All of us want to be free, especially when it comes to practicing our faith, which is so fundamental to who we are. In America, we tend to take religious freedom for granted, but millions of people around the world aren't so blessed. When basic freedoms are denied to us, the natural human reaction is one of anger. It is no surprise, then, that in countries where religious freedom is suppressed, violence soon follows. Today, we often see this violence spill into other countries in the form of terrorism. This is why religious freedom and national security go hand in hand. As religious freedom is cultivated worldwide, and as security and economic development occur along with it, the United States' national security interests are advanced. For more information on this important issue, visit frc.org/national security. That's frc.org/national security.
Are you ready to vote? Do you know the candidates and their platforms? There are important races happening for the Senate, the House, and many state and local primaries. Determining the right candidate to lead our nation can be difficult amidst the media spin and political rhetoric. Each elected official is given a platform to make a difference, and he or she will either be part of the problem or part of the solution when it comes to preserving and protecting your religious freedom, family values, and the dignity of human life. FRC Action is here to help prepare you to vote with our 2018 Voter Guide. Go to frcaction.org/voterguide to view the guide, election dates, and so much more. It's important to be informed when you enter the voting booth. This is your time to be a part of the solution for America. So, don't be silent. Be sure to vote. Again, that's frcaction.org/voterguide.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along on this Tuesday afternoon. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell moving forward, saying that hearings for Judge Kavanaugh will be taking place very soon. There will be a vote in early October prior to the midterm elections. All the while, the Senate will be pursuing various other projects, other priorities. And to find out more about those priorities, we're being joined now by Senator James Lankford of Oklahoma. James, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, glad to be with you again.
Well, before we get into some of the how you're going to juggle all those plates there in the Senate, keep all those plates spinning, I should say, let me first get your take on Brett Kavanaugh as the president's selection for the next Supreme Court justice.
Yeah, I'm going through and doing my research like everybody else is, but when I go through the initial look at him, it's pretty impressive, actually. Impressive academic career, impressive stand. But the most impressive thing that I look at as a judge is not just his personal life and his background and his education. It's his simple doctrine. Does he believe that the court writes law or puts in what they prefer to be in, or do they actually just interpret law? He's very solidly on the side of, I interpret law. I don't get to write it. And that's a prime look for me to be able to examine what he's going to do in the future based on what he's done in the past and what his judicial philosophy is. So I've been very, very pleased with everything that I've seen. I was there last night at the White House for the unveiling and the time to be able to hear him personally, talk through the issues with his family and his deep faith, his work with the homeless and what he's done in education, but then also where he stands on the law. So pleased to be able to see it. Looking forward to continuing to do more research.
Yeah, as you say, at the when you look at the initial information that's there, and you know, he's got 300 opinions. It's going to take a lot of people a long time to comb through all of those. But the basic judicial philosophy is what we would call a constitutionalist, a textualist. He abides by the letter of the Constitution. One of the areas that he has a number of cases on that appears very encouraging to me is on the issue of religious freedom. And I know that's an issue that you care very deeply about. So I imagine you're going to do a deeper dive into that area of his judicial record.
I most certainly will. It was good to be able to hear him even last night when he's running through his biography be so open about his faith. Now, that's fairly rare for a judge, you know, when they're introducing themselves to the country, to step aside from, you know, cases and case law and background and where I grew up to be able to step straight into, you know, his Jesuit education, his consistently and how often he both attends worship time, but his own children and investment in them in religious education. So he's very, very open about that. That is reaffirming again to say, if this is important to me, I understand that the basic principle is every American should have the freedom that I have to be able to live my faith out and to be able to practice that. That's exceptionally important to be able to hear someone who not only has faith, but clearly lives it and is not afraid to be able to speak about it in a public setting.
You know, that caught my attention as well when I was listening to him, and he made a point. And it wasn't just a passing point. It was how it was very involved, really at the center of his family life, who he is, going all the way back to being an altar boy. I think part of my thinking as I was processing that is because the others on the list, especially Amy Barrett and Judge Hardiman, both known openly for their faith. Amy Barrett being attacked for her faith, and of course the president's core base of support looking for someone who's going to defend religious freedom, and there's certainly a higher level of assurance if that value, that First Amendment freedom, is important to the judge himself or herself, you have a sense that he's going to be more aggressive in protecting it.
Yeah, you would think that. You know, it's hard to find people more aggressive about First Amendment free speech than you would find people of the press. They understand free speech exceptionally well because they live it every single day. It's the same thing for people of faith in the United States. If you actually live your faith out, and that's a core principle to you, you understand the value of that and what that really means. If you're not a person of faith, faith may be something that you can say you can put that on and off and take it on and off. It's just a hobby that you do or something, some social club that you participate in on weekends. But if you really live your faith, you understand it's much deeper than just an organization I'm a part of. It's the core of who I am. It's what the founding fathers called your deepest, most private possession that you have. And to be able to try to remove someone's faith or change their faith would be literally taking away their deepest, most possession.
Speaking of that issue of religious freedom, and I want to get to some of the other issues that the Senate's going to be dealing with over the next 2 months while these confirmation hearings are going on. But I want to jump to something that you've been personally involved in. And next week, Pastor Andrew Brunson is going to be back in court. He's being wrongfully detained in a Turkish prison. I know you were part of putting language into the National Defense Authorization Act that would restrict sales of certain military hardware to Turkey until he is released. Are we seeing any movement on behalf of Pastor Brunson?
We have seen some, but we'll know a lot more by the time we get to next week into that trial. We have members of the Department of Justice that are traveling to Turkey to be a part of this third trial for Andrew Brunson that they don't seem to ever complete it. Some people may ask, is this a third trial? Is these up again for the same thing? But no, they've not completed the first trial. They'll do a few days of it, then they'll hold, and then they'll come back a month later and do a few more days of it. Then they'll cancel it and move it a month later. So this is just dragging this along rather than trying to be able to actually resolve it. And one of the most painful aspects is they're not allowing him to bring any witnesses on his own behalf. They're saying every person that he wants to bring is a suspect, and so he can't have anyone speak on his behalf. What we have seen in the past week or so is we did have a delegation of some senators that went and met with President Erdogan from Turkey, had a very blunt conversation with him in preparation for this hearing. We've had messages going back and forth. We have members of the administration going to this next hearing. And we hope to be able to see some movement from it. But ultimately, this is Erdogan holding an American pastor as a hostage and as a leverage tool. And he has to get a very clear message that you can't hold Americans as leverage. We're not going to give on this, but neither will we forget. So if you're going to hold an American as a hostage, our response to that will be taking away the F-35 from Turkey, removing any military contracts that we have with Turkey, and isolating them. So if they're looking for something in response, what they're going to get is sanctions as the response coming back to them.
My fellow commissioner on the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, Christina Arriaga, is actually traveling to Turkey next week to be there for the hearing. And she's very concerned. She's met with Pastor Brunson, concerned about his just his emotional well-being as well as his physical well-being, and concerned that if he is sentenced to a long period of time, that his survival is in question.
He is a priority. 2 years, 2 years in a Turkish prison now, almost that he's been there. He's been 24 years in Turkey, two of those years now in the prison.
And I think people need to understand the prisons in many of these foreign countries are not like the prisons here in the United States.
No.
They're vastly different.
And he has spent a significant amount of time not in solitary confinement, and then he was moved into a cell that was designed for eight people that had 20 people in it instead of eight. And so he's had a very painful journey of even being in prison. So this is not like an American prison, to say the least, to be able to put in a Turkish prison, especially for someone who has done nothing to be able to push against the Turkish government, other than he's an American and he's a person of faith.
And folks, we need to be praying for this hearing. I believe it's on the, is it the 19th, 18th or 19th coming up next week. We need to be praying for Pastor Brunson, and that the efforts of so many on his behalf, from the administration to members of Congress, are successful in obtaining his release. Senator Lankford, this issue of religious freedom has taken on a whole new focus under this administration, given the fact that you look back 8 years ago, or over the last 8 years, we saw genocide in the Middle East. We didn't even want to address it as a country. The administration did not. Whole new day here in America and abroad when it comes to religious freedom now.
It is a different day, and the main focus is we can't spread the message of how valuable religious freedom is around the world if we're not living it ourselves. And so for this administration to focus in on what are we doing to be able to protect people of faith, and that's people of all faiths. I'm a Christian, not ashamed to be a Christ follower personally and my own personal faith and from my family and my own personal walk. But part of my goal is to be able to protect all people of faith, and so I'm free to be able to live my faith out as well. That's exceptionally important to us as a nation, that we don't compel any one religion, but we also don't prevent anyone from living out their faith as well. So what President Trump has done is he's put individuals within all the agencies to make sure that those agencies and entities are doing nothing to be able to inhibit people of faith, not putting policies in place to be able to restrict people living out their faith both within the entity and then by the policies that are put down by those agencies. That is an incredible difference from previous administrations where individuals of faith were both belittled, publicly shamed, put on websites to say these are groups that have a faith preference on them to try to be able to try to humiliate them into silence. So this is a very different day for people of faith being able to live their faith out.
And as you mentioned, a core tenet of Christianity is choice. We want people to choose to follow Christ, but it's their choice. Just as God gave Adam and Eve a choice in the garden, he gives each and every one of us a choice, and we respect that choice. We just want people to have the choice, and that's what advocating for religious freedom for all human beings is about, that they have a choice to choose or not choose. It's their choice. Can't be dictated to them by government. Senator Lankford, before we run out of time, what other priorities is the Senate going to be dealing with during the same time that we're having these confirmation hearings for Brett Kavanaugh?
Well, there's quite a bit going on. We have three nominations that are moving this week, as well as working on going to conference, what's called the National Defense Authorization. So that will move. That's all of our military policy for the country for the next year. That's actually what we're voting on right now. I've actually slipped off the floor to be able to call you. I'm in the cloakroom just outside the Senate chamber. And so that we're in a vote series on right now. We'll also deal with FAA, the Federal Aviation Administration. We have a farm bill conference that'll be coming up dealing with all of our ag policy, as well as nutrition policy for the country. We have appropriation bills. We have another set of those that will be moving onto the floor in the next 2 weeks. That's very important for us to be able to deal with. So there's quite a bit. The rest of the nominations that were still going to be here in August, as you know, 15 of us pushed on the leader to say we need to be here in August as well to be able to get caught up because there's been so much lost time on nominations. So we are going to be here in August, still dealing with nominations and appropriations bills to try to get caught up.
Are you confident that the Senate will confirm Brett Kavanaugh before the midterm election?
I'm confident. Well, obviously, we're working through the process on it. Barring any main issues that come up between now and the next couple of months, I anticipate the Judiciary Committee will hear him in about a month and a half, and within a couple of weeks, he'll be on the full Senate floor. So somewhere around 70 days from now, that should give us plenty of time for him to be in place by October the 1st for the beginning of the fall session of the Supreme Court. That's our real target, is to have everything complete and him in place by October the 1st.
All right. I don't want to keep you from work, so Senator James Lankford, I'll let you go. Thanks so much for joining us. As always, great to talk with you.
You bet. Great to be able to visit with you as well.
All right. Senator James Lankford of the Sooner State. Check out his website. You go to TonyPerkins.com. You can follow the links over. I called him Congressman because we first met. He was Congressman. We've actually traveled overseas together. He's great. Great guy. In fact, prior to coming to Congress, he was in the ministry overseeing what is probably one of, if not the largest, youth camp in America, Falls Creek in Oklahoma. But great guy in advocating for all the right things on Capitol Hill. And when you've got folks like that are, you know, going to go deeply into the record of judicial nominees, it gives you even a higher level of comfort. I'm comfortable with this administration based upon their track record. Now, I will tell you, and I've said it before, Brett Kavanaugh was not my first pick, but I'm fine with him. I think he's going to be a good justice. I think given the track record of this administration, I give him the benefit of the doubt. And his record does show that he is a strict constructionist. And so as they comb through the 300 different opinions, I think they're going to find good stuff. And I look for him to be confirmed, and I look for him to be a part of moving the court back to abiding by the letter of the Constitution. And that's what we want in the court. We don't want an activist court ruling and making conservative policy. Leave that to the Congress. Leave that to the states. Just let them interpret the law according to the Constitution. We don't want the judges who will turn the judicial bench into a workbench of radical liberal policies that they find in the shadows of the Constitution. That's what the left has done. We're not interested in that. And I believe Brett Kavanaugh is a solid pick, and I think this president deserves the support based upon the track record he has established in all of the judicial picks, from the district court level all the way to Neil Gorsuch on the Supreme Court. All right, folks, out of time. You can find out lots of resources. We'll be covering this for the next several weeks until the work is done, and we'll go deeper into the issue. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you, yes, you, have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.